when we started working together in 2015, or like late 2014, 2015, the biggest thing that happened and the biggest differentiator between me failing those rope climbs in 2014 and us actually going winning the games in 2015, it was all mindset. Yeah. You know, I was fit in 2014 and I was fit in 2015. It was my head that made the difference and how much we had worked on that. Mm-hmm. So I think that's something that, you know, it's out there and that we can all start learning and applying, and we just believe it so much.
Yeah.
It's all out there. I think everyone knows it all. It's just, do they believe it?
What confidence is has nothing to do with winning or the leaderboard. What confidence is knowing that you giving your best effort is enough.
Hi, Ben. Special guest on today's episode. Catherine and I just sat down, had a nice chat. And before we get to that, I just kind of wanted to talk to you a little bit about one thing. Recently on Instagram, you posted an image of your training together. And you said, paraphrasing, but something along the lines of that you've learned more from her about being a champion than you could ever teach her. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really interesting and really telling. And I'm curious what you meant by that. I'm curious sort of, should I have been surprised by that, I guess, first of all? And then why? Like, what have you learned from her that made you say that?
I've learned everything that there is to, I don't know, I should say everything there is. I've seen a really firsthand account and kind of pulled the curtain back and seen what the daily rituals, practices, and routines are of a champion. You know, I can read about it. I can have my own thought process about it. I can research it. I can try and pull the best practices of other high achievers and formulate my own opinions of what this looks like. But until you see it firsthand, you don't see that, you don't, it's hard to kind of conceptualize what it looks like on a day-to-day actionable level. You know, I have this theory about, you know, what I want my athletes to look, act, and train and compete like. Yep. But it's just that. It's a theory. And, you know, we're not machines and we're not just X's and O's and putting something into a program. You have to work with a whole bunch of different facets when you're talking about a human being that are variable and uncontrollable and emotional and so many different things. To see firsthand, as close as I am with Catherine, and we're incredibly close. She's almost a daughter to me. You know, I'm incredibly proud of our relationship. It's amazing to see truly what daily discipline looks like, mm-hmm. what true fortitude looks like, what true grit looks like, and all those characteristics that I like to talk about and I try to create and see them come full circle back. It's amazing. That's where all the learning takes place for me. I can teach her my thoughts on these things, but seeing it happen, you know, it just reinforces the things that I'm giving to her. And really, a lot of the stuff I'm giving to her is just pulling out what she's doing. Mm-hmm. She's already doing this stuff. I'm just kind of bringing it to the limelight and be like, this is what you do that makes you special.
Interesting. Yeah.
It's not a matter of like me saying like, we need to do it this way. This is who you were. This is what you were. And if you want to be something different, this is how you do it. It's very much like, this is how you become a champion. This is how you live your life. These are the guiding principles we need to live our life by going forward.
Yeah.
I have by far and away learned way more from Catherine than I believe she'll ever learn from me.
Mm-hmm. One of the things we talked about when we sat down was the importance of having you there to sort of be an unemotional part of her process. You know, we talked about the fact that, you know, even she still will react maybe poorly to a bad workout, right? For mm-hmm. example. And to have you there as somebody who isn't wrapped up in the emotions of whether it's a bad workout, a bad day, a bad event, whatever, and having that sort of balance has been something that she's found to be really valuable. And I think it's interesting when you say sort of what you just said, because it feels like she could be a competitor without a coach. I mean, you can't be a coach without an athlete, but you need that sort of that symbiotic relationship. Yep. You need that balance. You need that give and take, in order to really make each other better. And so I think that's a big thing that until talking to you guys, I'm not sure I connected before.
Yeah. I think first off, that's interesting that she picked up on that non-emotional part. We've never really talked about that. Yeah. But I believe that's the role of the coach. I'm excited that she picked up on that. Mm-hmm. I don't believe the coach is supposed to be the one that's on this, you know, the coaches that I admire are the ones that are on the sidelines and they've got it together. Mm-hmm. You know, they are not riding the emotional roller coaster. They are not highs and lows. I'm a fan of Bill Belichick, not Pete Carroll.
Yep.
That's the way, you know, I'm a big fan of John Wooden, not Bobby Knight.
Right.
You know, I'm very much a fan of Brad Stevens, who's the coach of the Celtics right now, mm-hmm. former coach of Butler, youngest guy to bring teams to the Final Four. And there's this great footage of, it's the Elite Eight game, the winning team goes to the Final Four. And his team is down by 1 point with 4 seconds left. They inbound the ball and the guy catches it and travels. And the announcers are going crazy. The other sideline goes crazy. They've won the game. Mm-hmm. Brad Stevens on the sidelines has his arms crossed, standing up, has his arms crossed, does no emotional facial expressions whatsoever, just walks down the bench, points to next. What's the next best actionable thing I do? Makes the appropriate substitution, mm-hmm. puts the next player in. The game's over though, right? The other team now has the ball with 3 seconds left and they're up. So the game's over. Puts the right guy in. That guy steals the ball. They go down and he scores and wins. Best part? Same zero reaction. Mm. Arms stay crossed. He walks down the sidelines and shakes the hand of the opposing coach. There's no... So the highest of highs and the lowest of lows... Yeah.
He looks the same.
Non-emotional.
Yeah.
Because emotions are not what's driving your best decisions. Mm-hmm. And that's the job of the coach. The athletes, in my opinion, should not be emotional either. There mm-hmm. should be a fierce intensity. Mm-hmm. And we define what that is for our athletes. But the coach, if your coach is emotional, your athletes are going to ride that same wave of emotion, which can, to me, can't bring any good.
Right. Right. All right, cool. Let's get to the interview with Katrin. Okay, Katrin, thank you so much for sitting down with us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. We're actually on the Cape where you guys mm-hmm. have about to wrap up your training camp for the summer.
Yeah, a little fight camp.
Yeah, that's right. Love that. So today I wanted to talk to you about a lot of things, but we're kind of use Ben's book that just came out sort of as an excuse to sit down with you because mm-hmm. you wrote a really beautiful, wonderful introduction to this book. And so I wanted to start sort of with that introduction with a story from that introduction. And a lot of people know the story of the rope climbs in 2014, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of when people talk about you, it always seems to begin there, which I think is funny because you were a games athlete before yeah. that. But we'll forget that for a second. It starts with 2014 and the rope climbs that at the regionals that you weren't able to do, you weren't able to go to the games. And the thing I wanted to ask you about first is something you mentioned in the book, which is that after that happened, you were friends with Ben, but you mm-hmm. certainly, you weren't his athlete. And he sent you a text, and I'm paraphrasing, but it basically said, this could be the best thing that ever happened to you, mm-hmm. right? And so if you could maybe walk us through that story a little bit,
yeah.
What your response to it was, and then really how that began what is now obviously a very fruitful relationship.
So yeah, it is funny because that's kind of where my story begins. is when I failed to qualify for my first CrossFit Games. So I'd made it 2 years previous, and I was kind of, I guess there are a lot of these athletes that we love CrossFit. And I had a lot of other things that I was doing. I was coaching. I was a full-time student, and I was trying to train for the CrossFit Games. And you kind of, when you're doing a lot of things, you end up doing a lot of things okay.
Yeah.
And I go to the gym and I would check the boxes. I would do the work that was necessary, and I would be good enough to make it to the CrossFit Games. And I could be a CrossFit Games athlete for the rest of the year. And I was content with that. And it wasn't really until I didn't make the CrossFit Games that I knew how badly I wanted to be there, how hard I wanted to work for it. And I didn't just want, my first 2 years, when I got to the games, I didn't have any goals. I was just happy to be there.
Yeah.
I honestly didn't even enjoy it because I was kind of overwhelmed. Once I got there, I didn't have a coach or a direction. I didn't really know how to handle the big scene. So after not making it, I'd been up to see if any, I'd probably known Ben for a couple months. I'd come up before those regionals, and I'd done like a regionals training camp with his athletes, with his team, and with the athletes that he had at the time, which was Becca Voigt, Chris Beeler, Michelle Letondra. And I didn't make the games, and I got a text from him saying that, you know, this could be the best thing that ever happened to me. And at the time, all I wanted to do was make the games. I was so mad. And like the response, I didn't give him a response for like 10, it must have been like 10 days, at least a week, because I couldn't understand how that could be good. Mm-hmm. You know, like the only thing that I wanted that summer, I only wanted to train for the games. I only wanted to go to the games. And I had failed to qualify, and I couldn't see what could possibly be good. So I did, like, after that, I took a break a little bit. I must have taken probably like a week off, and I went on vacation. I haven't been on a family vacation for years.
Yeah.
So I went with my dad and my siblings to Morocco, and I still can't remember how it came about or if it was random or not, but I read Michael Johnson's biography.
The sprinter.
Yep. And he was supposed to win, or I mean, he'd been the best. He'd won every single race in the 100 and 200 leading up to the 92 Olympics. And he kind of describes it how when he got to, you know, he describes his races very thoroughly. Like, it could be a whole chapter about a 100-meter race, which took him under 10 seconds,
right.
Which is very – it's like what he's thinking, what's the thought process, what he's focusing on. And he would always be like the dry face. He'd be looking down, and then he'd be like after about like 60, like 40 meters, he'd start like looking up. After 60 meters, he'd always do like a right, left, and he would be so – like in the corner of his eyes, he could never see anyone because he was so far ahead.
Right.
And he gets like a stomach bug or something leading up to – the games, and he was already in his tapering period, so he was doing lighter loads. He wasn't going as fast. He wasn't trying to put out the same power output, so I guess he didn't realize that he was losing strength and power.
Yep.
So when he gets to the games, suddenly he describes the same race, and he does his right left, and everyone's there, and he doesn't understand what's happening, and he doesn't even make the finals, which is for him a huge failure.
Yeah.
He comes back in 96. He wins gold in 100, 200, and adds 400.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was just I read it in the right time. And I read that instead of me being able to tell myself that I had – not that I had failed, but that I was a failure or that I didn't belong or that I wasn't as good as them or that I couldn't be there or compete with them. That's all such an easy thing to fall into. And instead it was like I had failed in that event and I had failed to qualify, but that no way defined me.
Mm-hmm.
And that I was It showed me that failure isn't a destination and you can move past it. And it sometimes, and like in my instance, was such a crucial part of a later success. I don't think I ever would have won the games without having failed in 2014, mm-hmm. you know? So I read that and then I started reading sports psychology. And once I got back from that vacation, I started training again. And when everyone else had finished the games, and I remember after that summer, it was hard for me to train.
Mm-hmm.
Because I felt like I was going to the gym and I was just training. But other people were going to the gym and they were training for the CrossFit Games.
Right.
And that sucked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So I remember waking up after the 2014 Games and it was like 1 million pounds were off my chest.
Yeah.
It was a clean slate.
Yeah, because everybody was now training for the next year.
No one had made it to the CrossFit Games.
Right.
And we were all in the same boat again, except everyone else was recovering for the games and I was ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
I go to another training camp with Ben. It must have been that August or September. And that's kind of when me and Moore started working together. And that's when I remember everyone was always telling me that Ben only has these athletes. Like, Ben doesn't take on any more athletes. And I remember like, I was just about to go back home to Iceland and I loved working with Ben and I loved being at CFNE. I loved the environment. I loved who I was there. I loved how much everyone works so hard there and it's so positive. It's a great environment. It really is. And it kept me like always coming back for more, but I wanted Ben to be my coach. So I remember I was like, I can ask him to be my coach and either he'll say no and I'll just still have no coach or he'll say yes and I'll have a coach. Okay, yeah. Yeah. So that really worked out very well.
No lose there.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was at the same time. I started reading The Champion's Mind.
Yep.
At the same time, I kind of started working with Ben and he would talk to me about, you know, what we should be focusing on, what we should not be focusing on. Our thought process, our mindset, our approach to training, life, everything. And kind of like me reading it, working with him. And I was so hungry to learn and just become better. And it was never about winning the CrossFit Games, never even crossed my mind.
Mm-hmm.
It was just every day. I just loved every day. I loved becoming better. It just kind of all clicked.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I started working with Ben at the exact right time. Like I needed to have that failure,
mm-hmm.
In order for it to go in that direction.
So working with him and moving across the world is sort of they're two different things because he works with athletes who, you know, Brooke and Cole, they don't live here. Matt doesn't live here. You're the only one who moved here. Was that a hard thing to pick up your life and move it across the ocean, or did that feel like that's what I do, that's what I'm going to do?
Both.
Yeah.
I always am so lucky with what it is now. I have a family here, the Bergerons, and then my family and friends back home. I have these two. It's one life, but you know these two wonderful worlds. Which is, it's hard to leave one or the other.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, I'm just extremely lucky, you know? But it kind of happened gradually. So I'd come for 4-week training camps and then I'd come for 8-week training camps and then I'd just start coming more frequently. And I just started, every time I would train at CFNE with Ben coaching me, it's totally different than getting programming.
Yep.
I know that I can, you know, back home, I would train with Annie every day. I can train well wherever. And I can get in, I don't know what I want to say, like 90 or 95% training day. Like I could still give high fives and it was a good training day. But having Ben coaching me and being at CFNE is every day is 100%. And being able to give something 100%. We actually just listened to a podcast on the way here. Liar Bird said that if you give everything 100%, somehow things will end up well, mm-hmm. like line up well. It was something in that direction. And it really does. If you can stand on the starting mat at the CrossFit Games and know that we gave 100% into every training day, and then you go give it 100% in the games, you're going to be happy at the end of it all, no matter what. There's no regrets. And that's kind of like to be able to make adjustments on the fly and take feedback and apply it right away. It's 100% every single day. So I was going to say, like, at first, it is hard. And I miss home and I yeah. miss my family. I miss my friends. And but I remember, like, making the decision to quit school or put school on hold. And quit coaching to pursue this 100%. And I remember like talking to my grandma about it. It's like, it's always hard to leave, but mm-hmm. we always said, and I mean, I talk so much to my mom and my dad and all my friends back home. It's like, we are always together. And I remember having the conversation with my grandma. She's like, you know what? We're doing this right now. You know, like school will wait.
Yep.
And if I want to do coaching, that will wait too. It's like, this is what we're doing right now. And even if we're all in different countries, like we're all in this together.
Mm-hmm.
And for now, this is the best place for me to be. Like to be in Boston, I've created an environment that it's so focused and it's so dialed in. You can, after every season, we can walk away with our head held high and know that we didn't leave any stones unturned, you know?
So you say 100%, and I think a lot of people feel like they go 100% at something. I feel like that's it's almost a cliche, you mm-hmm. know, like I gave this 100%. Yeah. But I'm really curious how you define 100% in training and in competition. Like, what does that actually mm-hmm. look like? And maybe what does that look like as opposed to what maybe most people think 100% is. Does that make sense?
I know exactly what you mean.
Because my guess is that before 2014, you thought you knew what 100% is, but now knowing what's the last couple of years, that's been redefined for you. Is that right?
No. I don't think if you would have asked me back then if I was doing everything that I could, honestly don't know. I've always been a hard worker.
Mm-hmm.
I've always worked hard and I've known that I was a hard worker. But there's a big difference between working hard and working really, really hard.
Yes.
And that's the 100% that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And I honestly think if you'd ask people how hard they work, I bet they'd say hard. But I don't think people can say they work very, very hard all the time. Or maybe, I don't know. But I am very critical of myself. And I ask myself multiple times. And it's not just, I ask myself during a workout. I ask myself, you know, during lifts. I want to use every single lift. Every single lift is an opportunity to become better. I'm not trying to finish the next three lifts. I'm using the next three lifts to become better. In a workout, you can go hard and you can make it hard, or you can pace it out so perfectly that it's hard the whole time and you give it just the oomph at the end that you need to finish every single ounce of energy that you have left. And there's a time and place for everything. Sometimes I think the 100% people think, do more, do more, do more. Sometimes Ben might tell me this is enough for today. And that's my 100%. You know, I'm going to put myself in a deficit if I do more. And the same with like volume versus intensity. It's such a fine line. And that's why it works so well with me and Ben. I don't know these things. Mm-hmm. I just want to keep working. Right. I just want to do more and more and more.
Yeah, he said that a big part of his job is to get you to stop.
Yes, that is. So for me, I would trust him with everything and anything. And I know that what he tells me to do is the best thing to do. And that's kind of the beauty of it all, because I know that what he tells me to do, I will do as well as I possibly can. I'll give it everything that I have. And if he tells me to stop, I will stop. And if he tells me to do something, I will do it really well. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, I wouldn't know what to do by myself. I don't know what's enough or when I should be going with. I'll ask him before a workout, you know, what is the stimulus of this workout? Sometimes he'll tell me, I don't want you sprawled out on the floor. Like, he wants me to do things more like, methodically. Mm-hmm. Yep. And like, don't put yourself in a deficit. Maybe this is more an active recovery. Now it's like, okay, I really want you to go. There's different things to it all. But it's a, and I'm still learning. I don't know what my 100% is, but I'll work very hard to get there. And I'll try as hard as I can every day to make sure that when I ask myself the question, am I working as hard as I can? I want to be able to say yes. Mm-hmm. But I do, it's probably one of the things that I doubt the most. It's one of those things that I never want to feel like I'm there, or I want to be the hardest worker, but I like thinking that someone else is working harder, mm-hmm. and it makes me want to chase them. Mm-hmm.
Do you still, I mean, maybe it's a silly question, but do you still feel like you have bad days? Days that you know, you crawl into bed and you're like, that didn't work today, or I wasn't in it, or I didn't give it 100%. Or have you guys got to a place where those days are really, really rare?
You know what? Our bad days are our best days. Like, we tell the stories, and like, there was a workout. I feel like when you fail, or I'm not gonna say fail, but when you do something wrong in training, when you're tired or something is going wrong or not like you want to, and what you can definitely look at and be like, oh, like, this is terrible, or this is a wasted training day, or whatever. Those are the days that you can learn. Mm-hmm. Those are the days that you can grow. If everything is just going great and happy-go-lucky, yeah, it's more fun. But you're not growing as much. Mm-hmm. And what if one of those bad days hits you in a competition? Do you know how to handle it? The more of those bad things that happen to you in training is awesome. Mm-hmm. I thought that I had a terrible training day. We were doing a workout that overhead squats and muscle ups at the Cape last year, which is, Cole was cruising through it, doing great. And those are movements that are harder for me. And I felt like it was coming up close to the games. I was being very judgmental of how I was doing, and I didn't like how my muscle ups were going, and I didn't think they were good enough. And so I kind of just like, I just walk outside after the workout. And I felt like it was terrible. It was horrible. And it was a bad training day. And suddenly I was like, we're not in the right place. We're not where we want to be.
Yeah.
And that's when like Ben came out and he was like, this is awesome. You know, that I now had the opportunity to, number one, I had the opportunity to learn how to flip the page. I had the opportunity to learn, that I will get workouts that are hard for me. These workouts are going to show up at the CrossFit Games. Right. I'm not going to go win every single workout at the CrossFit Games. And these workouts are going to show up. And I can either have that mindset, or I can continue to work as hard as I can through them. I could learn that. And there were workouts that I would, at the CrossFit Games, be going back like, okay, how should I have handled that workout?
Yep.
You know? So that was one of our favorite training days. One that I walked out, was unhappy. Wouldn't surprise me. There were a couple tears, you know, but our bad days are our best days. They happen and we learn.
What is the mechanism that you use to learn from those days? Because I think you said something really interesting, which is sort of that, like, if everything's going great, then you're probably not getting better to a degree, right? Like, you need those bad days. You might
be getting better, but yeah, I see. But you're not growing. Right, and you're not, right. When the adversity hits, are you strong enough? And have you gone through enough to know how to handle it at that point?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, like, so again, how do you process those days? Is it, or those moments, like, is it like literally you just sit down at the end of the night or, you know, at the end of the day and think, okay, I did that and that wrong? Or like, what is like, so literally, like, what is I'm the letting mechanism? Out
my secret. It's all Ben. I sit there and I want to cry and he'll come up and he'll be like, okay, let's talk about this.
Yeah.
And he can turn my mind.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's interesting to me in that there's, he is removed from the emotion of it to the point where he can look at it in a more holistic or a more sort of
like kind of from the outside, not judging it as much.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you say that that's necessary and that's important for you. And I think that's clearly that's working. And what I'm really curious about is it feels to me that that's still the minority in the sport of CrossFit, where athletes at the games have somebody whose job it is to remain impassioned and to look at the big picture and not look at the moment to moment stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously he does that, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you think a big part of your success is that you found somebody to fill that role when other people don't feel like it's necessary? Or did you guys just kind of, is this just working and it works for some people and it doesn't work for other people?
I honestly don't have an answer for that.
Yeah.
This works for us.
Right.
You know, our relationship works and we work together almost every single day of the year. And he knows me in workouts. He knows how I react. He knows if I'm reacting a certain way, what kind of mindset I am in, and then how to turn that. So like I just know what works for me, and it's not the same for everyone.
Yeah.
And what works for me isn't going to be for everyone else. But like I say, I kind of feel like we started working together at the right time. Where I was ready to learn and I was willing to work a lot and learn a lot from him. He does a lot where he leads by example. I think that's probably what kept me coming back for more. He's not just saying empty words. He says words that he lives by and that work. And that whole first year of us working together, we would, when we talk about our mindset or our approach to training and competition in life, it's like you're kind of hopping into it blindly. Like he would tell me what he believed and I would trust it 100%.
Yep.
And I would just do it as well as I could. And kind of like when we then won in 2015, that kind of validated it all. You know, it's kind of like, okay, like this really does work.
Yep.
And then you just continue to learn and you continue to try and grow. And it's not, we haven't figured everything out or there's so much to grow. It just validates the path that you're on and just to continue to grow. And I think that's the beauty of it all, that there is so much room to grow. There really is. Mm-hmm. It's like, we say, like right now, I feel great. I'm so excited for the games and we've prepared very well. And I feel like we're ready for the games, but at the same time, we're not like ready. We're not a finished product. Like, oh my gosh, I could tell you everything that we're still working on and all the progressions that we can keep on doing and keep on getting better at. That's what keeps me coming back for more. Yeah.
How important have you found it to be? So one of the things that I think is really interesting, you know, that you've said about being at New England, being with Ben, I know that you're super close with the Bergerons as a family. How important have you found it in your sort of in your experience to surround yourself with people who make you better, and better can be however you define better, because each person is going to make you better in a different way. But how important has that element been, literally just surrounding yourself with the people that you've surrounded yourself with in terms of how much you've been able to progress over the last 3 or 4 years or whatever it's been?
It's everything. You are who you surround yourself with. You really are. You're the mindset of the people around you. You're the energy of the people around you. The habits, everything. You choose who you surround yourself with. It's all a choice.
Yeah.
And not a day goes by that I don't think about how lucky I am with the people that I have around me. You know, my mom, my dad, my grandpa, the 23 years that I had with my grandma, my siblings, my best friends, the Bergerons. It's like the whole, like, I'm very, very lucky.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope everyone can feel that way. And like you say, like, everyone kind of participates, like, in a different aspect of, like, making you better in some way.
Yep.
But if someone's not making you better, if someone's bringing negative energy to your life or not making you happy or something, you don't have to associate yourself with them. You don't have to spend your time with them and make yourself feel worse. I think it was Michael Kazu posted this about a D, or it was a D about Michael. They're both very cute with posting about each other. But they were saying that you don't fall in love with people. You fall in love with who you are with certain people.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be a partner or friends or whatever that is. But I read it and I was like, that's so true. It's not necessarily always like, I don't think it's necessarily the people. It's who you are together and who you are with them and who, like, what they bring out in you. And I think that's the most important about the people around you. Like, who do they bring out in you? Is that who you want to be? Are you closer to who you want to become? And those are big things.
In a previous podcast, I think I don't remember what number it is, but Ben and I were talking about this month and this sort of this training camp and having you and Brooke and Cole all in the same place at the same time. And I asked a question that I thought he was going to answer differently. And my question was, is the dream sort of recreating this environment year round, right? Like, having you and Brooke and Cole and everybody in the same place all of the time. And so I thought, just not knowing anything, I thought, like, of course that has to be better. It's got to be good. If it's good for 30 days, it must be good for 330 days. But his answer was no, that it's not ideal, because he wasn't sure that you, and I don't know that he was speaking specifically about you, but just having athletes at your caliber being in the gym at the same time all the time, you guys would sort of run yourself ragged, right? You'd always be, you'd always be competing even when you're not competing.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's interesting to me to think about, like, what the future of the sport looks like, if we can assume to some degree that it's got to look similar to what you and Ben have figured out, right? Being in the same place at the same time, day in and day out, working together, one person thinking about it differently than the other person. But I don't, like, there aren't that many coaches. There aren't that many Bens. So I'm just curious how you see the sport continuing to grow, because people are going to look at what you're doing and they're going to try to replicate it. But if it's not the case that you can put Brooke here and two other athletes and you get better, like, then I'm just curious what you think about what it looks like. If it's not that, if it's not like everybody lives together in a house,
I mean,
and trains together.
It's not like there aren't more coaches than there are more athletes. I mean, in 2015, I came into the games as someone who hadn't even made it the previous year before. no one is expecting me to go win the games. At the same time as like there are probably tons of athletes right now that are shooting up and tons of coaches right now that are shooting up. Mm-hmm. We just don't know about them
right
or know about them yet.
Yep.
At the same time as like if it works for us to work together, maybe someone else will find a coach-athlete relationship that will work just as well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I really don't know. I think it's just going to continue to grow. And even look at where we were. I mean, when I started at the end of 2011, I just started CrossFit and I made it right away to the CrossFit Games.
Yeah.
Like that would never happen now.
Correct.
You know, people can't just enter the sport and make the CrossFit Games. You got to train for this year. And you can't even really, it's not even a hobby anymore. People do this all year round as their job.
Yep.
So it's already grown so much. And the same with like coaches used to be more just like programmers and throw programming out there. And now, I mean, maybe it works for some people, but at least for me, it's the best thing that I can come and I can work with Ben every single day. And I have a coach. I can only see it getting bigger and better. And once we know more, I think we still know so little.
Interesting. You know? Yeah.
Like, it's not many years ago that people thought you can't run a 5-minute mile and squat 500 pounds. And that's now true. That's kind of like, I'm not going to say everyone can do that, but a lot of people can do that now. Yeah. And I think we're just going to continue breaking barriers. And it's not like we're going to become very good at endurance that we can't become strong. Like we're going to come, everything's going to start lifting up. I think, do you remember the 3-minute Fran thing? Like you were legit. If you do a 3-minute Fran and you just had to make that, like everyone can do that now.
Yes.
You know, if you're at the CrossFit Games, you're trying to break the 2-minute barrier.
Yeah.
That's like 30%.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, everyone is getting so much better.
Mm-hmm.
Like the lifts are getting better. The fitness is getting better. The endurance is getting better. Everything is getting better. And I think it's just going to continue to rise once we know more and once we've had more time in the sport.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that how much of that improvement or that potential improvement do you see happening physically versus mentally? In other words, how much of that growth do you think is because the science helps or the training gets mm-hmm. tweaked, and how much of that is people understanding the stuff that Ben talks about in this book and the stuff that you guys talk about every day? Where do you see that the sort of the needle on the importance of or the reliance on either one of those?
Both. And I think they're totally different questions. Number one, yes, we're going to continue to get physically better. But at the same time as when we started working together in 2015 or like late 2014, 2015, the biggest thing that happened and the biggest differentiator between me failing those rope climbs in 2014 and us actually going winning the games in 2015, it was all mindset.
Yeah.
You know, I was fit in 2014 and I was fit in 2015. It was my head that made the difference and how much we had worked on that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's something that, you know, it's out there and that we can all start learning and applying, and we just believe it so much.
Yeah.
It's all out there. I think everyone knows it all. It's just, do they believe it? And mm-hmm. what works for each individual? Like we're all so different. So I think for everyone, there's so much room to grow in both areas, but they're totally different areas.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. One of the things that I was thinking about when I was reading the book was that sort of similar to what you just said is like all of this stuff, is, you know, it's out there, right? Mm-hmm. You can find it. Sports psychology is not mm-hmm. a new field, right? It's been around. And the thing that struck me was there is a huge gap between sort of knowing it and doing it. Right.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that you put it as
like the believing it.
That's what I mean. Like, that's how that's interesting because I didn't think that that's the key. Like, for me, it was like, you've got to, you know, you have to dedicate yourself to it or like you've got to find a method that works. But you're right. Believing in it
yeah.
is the first step. believing that it is the thing that can move the needle for you is the first step of figuring out how to implement it or how to put it into a daily practice. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Did you always believe in it? I guess you sort of answered that a little bit in terms of, you know, that break after not making it to the games.
Honestly, I didn't know about it.
Yeah.
I didn't know that everyone wants to get stronger, to have bigger lifts. Everyone wants a faster mile time. Everyone wants to know how their pull-ups and thrusters are paired together, all of that. But what Ben does is that he focuses on our character first and foremost. And then he wants certain characters that will follow a certain process. It's what we call the process. Mm-hmm. That then will lead to results. That then will lead to better mile times. That then will lead to better, a bigger snatch or bigger clean or whatever that is. And I know it doesn't seem like it fits. Like, it seems like the mindset and the character and who you are is going to lead to a faster mile time. But it really does. And it does work. It just takes a certain character to follow a certain process that will lead to the faster mile time or mm-hmm. the bigger clean or whatever that is. So honestly, I did not know about any sports psychology or anything back then. I didn't know there was a good or a bad mindset. I just knew that I was competitive and driven, but that's so totally different, mm-hmm. you know? But once I started reading those things, once I started working with Ben, I believed in it fully. I committed to it fully. So I think once I knew, that's something that I really, really went with. So, yeah.
I think that is a good place to end it. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course.